Welcome to episode 278 of After the Credits.
We're almost at 300.
Amazing.
Oh, it's been a long time. I am your co-host, Marina Antunes. I don't even know if I said the name of the show. Welcome to After the Credits. Your co-host, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen, not the 300. What?
Dylan Gladry of ATC.
Not the 100.
Not the 100. Not the 200.
Not the mama.
The 276.
Not the mama. Actually, 277.
277?
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. I know.
It's been a long time coming. Welcome to the Littlest Hobo Media Spew for December.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, the energy just dropped way down.
Where we talk about the things that we have been watching, reading,
listening,
well, some of us reading, listening to over the last couple of weeks.
But not eating or touching.
And no, touching.
Only three of the five senses.
Yes, just three. Oh, I see what you mean. God, I'm very slow today, apparently. I was just telling Dale off mic that I am low on everything. Like, I did nothing but watch movies. Like, legit nothing.
Oh, okay.
But eat, sleep, watch movies.
That sounds wonderful.
Sure.
Okay.
Working and sleeping tons the last little while. So.
Yeah. I lie. I did watch one TV show regularly.
Okay.
Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to talking about that.
Well, why don't we start there? Because it's the only TV show I
Well, I wanted to say, you went to Whistler.
I went to Whistler. Yeah, but I mean, it's Whistler. I don't know.
It's Whistler. Okay.
There were movies. They were okay. I didn't really see anything there that like blew my mind, except for maybe one movie that I really, really liked. Am I going to remember the name of it? Hold on.
I have one other question though. Like,
yes.
Has the festival got its soul back or is it still lost?
I don't know. It's just a weird little festival. I don't really know what to tell you, be totally honest. I mean, the movies are good. There's a lot of really, really great. One of the things that I really like about Whistler all the time is that they always celebrate Canadian talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very small market in comparison to, like, the U.S. And, you know, there isn't as much money here, so the movies are certainly on a much smaller scale. But there's always like one or two little hidden gems in the mix. And that was the truth this year. Same thing. There were two BC films that I really, really liked that I would really recommend. One of them is called Thunderbird, which is like a mystery thriller with like a First Nations band, which is really, really interesting and really good, like super solid. I'd highly recommend keeping an eye out for that. And I'm sure it might get picked up and open somewhere. And then the other one, I'm trying to find the name. Oh, it's called Volition. It's like a time travel movie done like on zero money. And it is so good. Like so good. I saw it and I was like, shit, that movie was amazing. But I mean, there's always like one or two. So those were the two sort of highlights that I really, really liked. Dan and I went to see Vivarium. With Imogen Poots and, oh my gosh, the guy that played Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network.
Oh, yeah, Jesse
Eisenberg.
And it is weird. There's like no, like there are weird movies and then once in a while you see something that's just like so weird. You're like, okay, using weird for those other things was not appropriate because this is weird.
So we're onto the Lynchian scale of weird.
Yeah, for sure. Like, totally. Excellent. It's like insanity. It's done by, the film's made by an Irish director. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. So it's about this couple that are looking for a new home. They go and check out this sales center for like a community, whatever. I can't remember.
Development?
Yeah, like just, I can't remember the words. But basically, like, out in the middle, in like, way
suburb
in the suburbs.
Thing?
Yeah, yeah. So they go out. They're, like, they weren't planning on looking, going out to look, but the guy kind of talks them into it. So the next thing that, you know, they're following this guy out into the middle of nowhere into this, you know, development. And, you know, the guy's showing them the house. And then he, like, takes off. And they try to get out, but they can't because all the houses look the same and they get lost and then they're just stuck there. And just weird shit happens. It's so weird. It's very, very strange.
Awesome.
Like, it gets bizarre. Like, bang your head against the wall. Like, what the fuck did I just watch bizarre? But there was no snow, so that was a bit disappointing. But other than that, Whistler was fun. We always have a good time.
Yep.
Every time I hear Whistler Film Festival, I think of Zogs.
We didn't hit Zogs this year.
What?
I know. It's not the same when it's just us.
You know?
It is true.
With the group, it's a little bit different.
I do. You know, I so used to look forward to that. Like, it was like the highlight
there's
of my
always,
year.
There's always 2020.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Plan ahead.
If it gets its soul back.
I think it's there. I mean, it is what it is what you make of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the movies are there. They certainly have an audience, which is... like amazing to me because the city of Whistler is so like the municipality of Whistler is so small. But I think that they get a really interesting blend of both like just regular moviegoers and industry people that actually go to the movies, which is like unheard of anywhere else. It's an interesting mix. I mean, we certainly had fun.
Nice.
It's always a fun time, but yeah, that was Whistler.
Okay.
But so should we talk TV?
Yeah.
Because like I say, the only thing that, you know, we've been watching with any sort of consistency is Mandalorian, which wrapped up its first season.
I have not seen an episode because I refuse to give any money to Disney if I can at all help it. But my coworker who has been ranting about it nonstop since it started, came to work and he's practically squealing, going, "There were gray Jawas, Colleen. You have to watch it now." I'm like, I do not have to watch it.
The first episode, this is so common. Like, I almost think now, I the first episode kind of left me, it's like, oh shit, really? This looks like it's going to be really garbagey. And somewhere in the second episode, and yes, it was when we had the big reveal of who was in the little basket, it was like it started to get in, but it still wasn't. It's like, oh, okay, this is kind of interesting. I think it was the third episode before I really kind of felt like the story was going someplace. And then the ride was so much fun after that.
Yeah, and for me, I mean...
And I don't want to do spoilers because it's still relatively new.
Yeah, and I mean, some people haven't seen it yet. I mean, I think that the reveal of what's in the basket is kind of like dead now. Everybody knows kind of what that is, but still. For me, as not a huge... like.
Same here.
I'm a like passing Star Wars fan.
Yeah. Right?
Like most of it comes and goes and I'm like, yeah, whatever. It was Star Wars.
All I knew was the guy kind of looked like Boba Fett. I had no idea of the Mandalorian backstory or
exactly.
Anything.
So, I mean, I really like the fact that, you know, it works for, you know, the layman Star Wars fan. But, you know, if you're really entrenched in the mythology and the lore of Star Wars, there's also a little bit of extra there for the super fans. And it was really entertaining and really fun and really adult. And
I've enjoyed it far more than I have the last whole bunch of movies.
All of the movies, as far as I'm concerned.
I liked Rogue One way back
when. Yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I seem to be liking the movies that are not part of, like, the canon.
Right.
Because they're allowed to, I don't know if it's, like, allowed to, like, do different things that just feel a little, like,
there was an interesting
or something.
Anna Lee Newitz did that New York Times, I think, piece on the, kind of that whole thing. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see it.
I'll see if I can find it. It was talking about how, society has changed so much since the first three movies. People can't even agree on like good and evil. So trying to have a movie based on good and evil is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other constraints of like people have expectations. I don't know. I started skimming it. She was going into way much more detail than I cared, but there was some interesting points in there for as far as I did read.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested.
Like you were saying, like this was just a whole in the universe, but not, you didn't have to know about canon. There was nothing
Yeah.
And it was just really
and I like
a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like that it didn't take... I mean, it was serious when it needed to be, but it wasn't afraid to also have laughs.
And the story premise was really good. Yeah. Like, you have this lone gunman, super competent killer who suddenly basically become a nanny. Like, I don't think I'm giving anything away on that.
No, it's like Leon.
And you're like
I was thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going like, what the fuck? Like, why is he doing it? And then they came out with this like fairly credible, at least like, but the thing is when that came out, it was so much fun. It's like, okay, this doesn't make sense, but I'm here for the ride.
Yeah.
Which is what you want. And then they tease it out, right? So there was so much good storytelling in this. I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though for me it had what amounted to a really rough start. Like the first quarter of it, basically, I was like, and then it took off.
Yeah. I was in from the beginning, but that's basically the only TV we've been watching. Oh, that, and I highly recommend the Eddie Murphy episode of Saturday Night Live, which was hilarious. That killed.
Oh, the only thing I've done was Saturday. I heard good things about that.
Yeah.
I watched the Justin Trudeau Trump takedown opening sequence. Yeah, that was hilarious.
There's been some really good stuff this season. But yeah, that Eddie Murphy one was pretty great. It was pretty funny. But that's it as far as TV for me.
I'm watching Star Trek DS9 while I'm doing 3D printing. Oh, I'm 3D printing a Jawa blaster.
Nice.
Yeah. But I'm only watching the Ferengi heavy episodes because I'm all about the Ferengi and the rest of the Federation can all die for as far. I'm Ferengi for life, man. I love those guys.
Do you know about the documentary?
About Ferengis?
Deep Space Nine.
No, does it have a featurely of Ferengis?
Some of the actors that played Ferengi.
Hammond.
It's what we left behind. I think is what it's called.
Oh, okay.
No, I haven't. But Ferengis, man, they're the best. And the other thing I've watched recently, and you might like this if you haven't already watched it. Living with Yourself. It's Paul Rudd's TV show. I
haven't seen it yet.
It is brilliant.
Of course it is. It's Paul Rudd. God damn it.
Paul Rudd, the premise, unbeknownst, he goes to a spa for like rejuvenation. And I won't go into any of the details, but it ends up there's two of Paul Rudd's. And they're interacting with each other and like sharing the same wife. And it just gets stupid.
I have
so
not
fast.
Heard of
Oh, yeah,
this.
It's on Netflix.
It's a Netflix
thing. I actually thought it was a movie, and then I saw it was a series, and I'm like,
it's like okay. Six or eight episodes, and it is the best. I love Paul Rudd, and man, this is the perfect vehicle for him.
That's awesome.
He gets to play Paul Rudd at the best Paul Rudd.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so checking this out.
Yeah,
it is super good.
It's supposed to be really good.
It's weird though; they didn't really advertise it well. Like I only passing saw a mention on Facebook, and so I had to do a search because it was not coming up in any of the new releases.
It's funny you mentioned that because I did read an article in passing. I'll see if I can dig it up where they were talking about how the Mandalorian's weekly release makes a case for weekly releases rather than the dump on Netflix because it keeps the conversation going on a weekly basis rather than, you know, your stuff all gets on Netflix in 1 week and in 1 day and then, you know, in a week's time it's gone.
I've always, yeah.
Yeah.
Things have blipped by.
I don't want to sort of live my life basically around television schedule. Like I did that for like 30 years. It's like, oh, it's Thursday night. I want to watch that. That sucks. I just want all access to it now.
You could do a hybrid, you know, 4 and 4 or something.
Well, I didn't even BitTorrent the Mandalorian until it's done. I guess now I could steal it from Disney because I don't want to give them another cent.
I mean, I think Apple did a really good job with that because they released, like when they launched, they released, I think it was like 4 episodes of most of their shows and then everything else was on a weekly basis. So that's kind of a nice little hybrid too. Mm.
I have watched a little bit more TV than you folks have. So His Dark Materials wrapped up.
Oh, yeah. I want to see that.
This was another one where it had a bit of a slow start, but it just kept getting better. The characters were great. I loved how they had these different kinds of villains. Like they had these really mundane bureaucratic villains, and then they had just out and out sinister people. And they had people that were like kind of gray. It was, mm-hmm. it was really a lot of fun watching that. And, your man, James McAvoy, in the last episode, man, very well played.
I really want to see the show.
I quite enjoyed it. There was some really good storytelling and acting in there.
It's a good series.
Lin-Manuel does a really fun cameo.
Oh, okay.
All kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, it's a good series of books, so I'm not surprised that the movies.
Well, I mean, it's like the Golden Compass didn't quite do it.
Well, I think the problem with the Golden Compass is it was by committee, right?
Like right.
They were trying to appease a large audience, whereas the BBC version is the BBC and version, right? It's a miniseries that I think takes the material a lot more seriously than the movie ever did.
I haven't really read a lot of
Philip Pullman
feedback on it, so I don't know. But yeah, the next one is a hot mess. The Witcher.
Okay, I've only seen two episodes. Don't disappoint me.
No,
well, I know it's going to be a hot mess because
I am really interested in your comment after. No, I'll say right now, like I enjoyed the series. The timeline, the way they'd done the timelines, it can get confusing. And I read that a lot of comments like, I don't know what the hell's happening, but I'm enjoying this. And having played one of the video games and read one of the books, I had a little bit better idea. Like, I'm like, well, this is kind of like, and then in the end, it all came together for me. I'm not sure it will for a lot of people. And especially there's so many characters. So you see the character at one point in their life and then at a different point in their life. And you're kind of like, is that the same person? Like what's kind of, but no, I really enjoyed it. Some of the, nudity fell a little bit out of place. And I think it's going to catch some criticism for that. Some of it was actually, whenever you combine nudity with violence, I get a little bit uncomfortable. And there was a little bit of that. But that kind of aside, and there were some other things that kind of popped up as maybe problematic. So I'm like sitting there, it's like, oh, I don't know. I'm enjoying this, but should I? but Henry Cavill as Geralt of Rivia, he nailed it. He nailed it so well. The Bard was hilarious. The, Yennefer character wasn't quite what I was expecting. So
is she the princess?
No, she's a sorceress.
Okay.
Yennefer of Vengeba.
She the one that's training the other
She's the one that was misformed.
Oh yeah, okay.
So her
I'm only like on episode two, okay. So the names are still kind of like
right. Yeah, she's the sorceress. I had a, based on the book and in the video game, a somewhat different picture of her. So I don't know that I can judge the actor's performance honestly, just because expectations.
Yeah.
But no, definitely like a hot mess, but I enjoyed it. I hope it gets a second season.
Okay, I'm in.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I did season one. This was another one. I actually stopped watching it halfway through the first episode just because it's like, oh, this is like this whole thing with the husband. And a friend was like, well, you know, you got to watch the first episode to the end. And so I went back and I did. And it's like, oh, this is interesting now. And watch the first season. It's it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing seasons two and three now.
Yeah, season three is coming out, the final season.
It's out.
Three
is out, yeah.
Okay,
three's done. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Season two is great. When they go to the Catskills, I'll just say the manager walking around with the plunger because no one questions someone walking around with a plunger. I'm like, going, I love this lady.
Oh, yeah. Was it Ellen Burstein?
Yeah. She reminds me of like Rhoda from
I have liked her since actually Mad TV days.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Right. And she's written and done voices for Seth MacFarlane's what the hell's that called?
Family Guy?
Family Guy. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, she's been consistently doing stuff, not always in the public, but I've always enjoyed her. And finally, The Expanse season 4. Yay!
I will get to finish that. I promise.
It is a complete change of pace from the first 3 seasons.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like that was almost a complete storyline. I don't know how the book series went, but it feels like almost like the, you know, trilogy 1, trilogy 2 or something, because it's a whole different kind of thing. And I kind of miss the mystery from the first story arc, but there are so many great characters. And it's like, I was going to start writing it down, and it's just like, they're all so fucking good. Like, I enjoy it. Well, okay, there's the main character is a little bit doughy eyed sometimes, but all of the supporting cast is great. But this season, there's 2 characters, Drummer and Ashford, played by Kara G and David Stratham.
Oh, yeah.
Kara G actually is Canadian actress from Calgary. They played Belter Resistance, but different factions. And in the first shows, they were actually almost adversarial. And they started working together because of the situation. The writing and their performances of the writing for those characters, I was just delighted the whole time. They play off each other so well.
Awesome.
I'm hoping that gets a season 5. I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, and that was on Amazon, right?
Yeah, it started off on Sci-Fi.
Yep.
And then Sci-Fi didn't like the financial deal, even though it was super successful, and Amazon took it over. And yeah, that's my TV.
Okay, I'll try to make this quick. I watched a lot of movies. I will try to not bore you to death. 1917, I think we already talked about this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Highly, 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 highly recommended. Nice. Uncut Gems, also, if you see nothing else this month, I would say see this because it's amazing. It is playing in like very sort of limited release theatrically art houses. In the States, it is getting a theatrical release. In Canada, I guess nobody wanted it. It's going to Netflix, but they haven't announced when it's going to release.
Nice.
So Adam Sandler playing a Jewish jeweler in New York City. Bad things go worse for him. It covers only like a short period of time. It's like, you know, I'd say maybe like a couple of days.
I love that. Bad things go worse.
It is, because it starts off badly and like you think he's going ahead and then he does something else that's stupid and you're like, you're just an idiot. You're just digging yourself deeper and deeper and deeper. And then it ends and you're like, yeah, that's kind of how it was going to end. Even though I did not see it coming. Dolomite is My Name with Eddie Murphy about Rudy Ray Moore, the 1970s like artist who like got into blaxploitation movies and was like writing, directing, producing, starring. And
I saw that on one of the top decade lists.
Yeah, it's really, 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 really good. It's directed by Craig Brewer, who did Black Snake Moan and Hustle and Flow.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's been kind of a little quieter the last couple of years, but he's directed this. It's amazing. It's so good. It's so much fun. Eddie Murphy and Wesley Snipes are hilarious. Craig Robinson is in it. Just like a whole cast of people. And just to see like how Moore like hustles to get shit done. And Eddie Murphy is like on point. He's so good. So it's on Netflix now. Highly recommended. The Kingmaker. This is Lauren Greenfield. She's a documentary filmmaker whose films... She did like The Queen of Versailles and... Generation Wealth, I think it's called. So her movies are like very much about culture and culture's a fascination with like money and wealth. And so this documentary is about Imelda Marcos. And it's fucking crazy. Like, it's crazy. It's a Showtime documentary. And I say it's crazy because Marcos, like the entire family, opens the door to this woman and like lays it all out there. Like, they must, like, I don't know if they're just stupid or naive or if they really feel that what they're doing is right. But like, she like just records these people doing things and you're like, are you for real? Like, do you really think that this is... Like, it feels like these people think that this is, like, how things really run.
They're so far in their own bubble.
Yeah, it's so corrupt and so just, like, jaw-droppingly... I mean, it's insanity. It's just so crazy. I highly recommend checking this out if you have a chance to see it.
It's probably right up there with, like, the Trump family kind of thing.
Yeah,
some of the stuff, like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, are you so not self-aware that, like, that the is company exactly you it. Just made,
exactly.
your dad bought your school a building to get you in.
Yep.
And you're dissing on
that's exactly it. That's there is so far, so they're so disconnected from reality that their reality is just like
my dad didn't pay to get my SAT like an extra 5 minutes. Now he bought you a fucking building to get in the school.
Yeah, it's it's crazy. It's so good. I highly recommend it if you have a chance to see it. Greta Gerwig's Little Women.
Oh, I've been hearing so many good things about that.
It's really it's well-deserving of the praise. I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, I've seen like two of the other versions. And of course, for me growing up, the one that was the version was the 90s version with, oh my God, my mind's gone blank. What's her name? Oh, fuck. I'm not going to try. But the 90s version is the one that I kind of grew up watching. This one is, I mean, I've never read the book, which is rather shocking. So I'm going to try to fix that in this year just to get more of a sense for the story. But I really liked it. I like the storyline. Gerwig has given not more weight, but the way that the story sort of handles the various characters shines a light on some characters that haven't in the past been as well received.
Was this the one with Susan Sarandon, Winona Ryder?
That's the one. Yep. Yeah, that's the one. So it's very good. It's fun and sweet and just really charming and totally the kind of movie that you want to watch with, you know, all the ladies in the family and the guys too. I mean, it's just really good filmmaking. I finally caught up with Joanna Hogg's The Souvenir, which is just as good as everybody says it is. It's she directed, my mind is going to go blank. I can't remember what the other movies that she's made. But this is about a young, it's kind of autobiographical. It's about a young film school student who has this very, very troubled relationship with an older man who has substance abuse problems. And it's literally just like you watch a relationship develop, grow, and then completely collapse. It's really heartbreaking and really, really, really well done. I Lost My Body on Netflix. This is the animated film about the hand, the severed hand that's trying to find its owner. Okay, I know. It sounds like the weirdest thing ever.
Brilliant.
I kind of left it thinking, okay, what is the movie about a severed hand really going to tell me about anything? But I'll watch it anyways because it's much buzzed about. The buzz is real. Ignore the fact that it's the story about a severed hand because the entire thing is told kind of in flashbacks. It's kind of just the setup for the story that unfolds, which is about a young man who is kind of living a miserable existence until he meets this young woman who changes his life. And you kind of see it in flashback. You see it from when he was a young boy and what's happened. It's stunning. And it's kind of the thing that you want animation to be because it uses the medium in really interesting ways that you wouldn't be able to use a real camera for. Because you can put cameras in a different place and give you different perspectives and just do things that would be otherwise impossible. And it completely uses that. And it's absolutely beautiful and really emotionally poignant. And if there was anything in this world that would win an Oscar, but it probably won't because Disney's probably already bought it. But it's well deserving of your time, if nothing else. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the new Tarantino.
It's a Tarantino.
I throw my hands up because I'm like, okay, sure. I don't know. Like, I really don't know. It's a retelling of... historical reimagining of the Tate murders, essentially, is what it comes down to. I mean, the performances are really, really great. And I like what it's saying about, you know, old timey Hollywood. And I mean, it's really well made. He makes good movies. To me, they're just not interesting.
Like, I mean, I keep reading great things about it, but the story was like, I just, couldn't bring myself to even be interested.
No, and I mean, I do like aspects of it. I found it too long, and I know it's sacrilege, God Almighty. But I don't know. To me, it was just kind of rambling and a bit too long. And
no,
yes, the performances are excellent. And DiCaprio has some like amazing moments. But I mean, the movie is just, I don't know. To me, it was just a movie. It didn't change my life. I have no other feelings about it. Like, to me, it didn't impress me to the point where I would like add it to my top 10 list even. I just didn't like it that much. It is what it is. Bombshell, the Jay Roach movie with Charlize Theron and Nicole Kidman and Margot Robbie about the downfall of Roger Ailes. It's really good. It's really funny in places and it's really heartbreaking in others. And the performances are excellent. Charlize owns. She really, really does. She's great. Motherless Brooklyn, the Edward Norton written and directed adaptation of the Jonathan Lethem novel about a private investigator with Tourette's. It's good. It's super solid. I really enjoyed it. It's a bit on the long side and it gets kind of meandering and a bit too long. But overall, I enjoyed it and I thought Norton was pretty good. The Report on Amazon, this is with Adam Driver and Annette Bening about the Senate's report into the extreme interrogation methods that the CIA used in the black ops sites during the war. It's interesting, but it's kind of just like very bland. Like, I don't know. It's literally a story about a guy writing a report. It can only be so interesting. I mean, Adam Driver is really good, but it's just, you know, there's very little tension. It's okay, I guess. Dark Waters, Todd Haynes directing Mark Ruffalo, also a real-life story about a lawyer who takes DuPont to court.
Oh, right, yeah.
What I took from this is DuPont sucks, and Teflon might be killing you. So, yeah, there's that. It's good, but it's not Adam Brockovich.
But I love my Teflon tape. My favorite thing.
Just warn you, it might be killing you.
All right.
Just Mercy, which we talked about before with this is the biopic of the lawyer who is representing men who are on death row. It's really solid, but it's not really anything to write home about. I thought it was okay at best. The Lighthouse, which kicked my ass, with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, about these two dudes that are like stranded in the lighthouse. This is the new one from Robert Eggers, who did The Witch. It's insane, and it's really fucked up. Colleen, you are going to love this movie.
Lighthouse, got it.
The Lighthouse. It's the aspect ratio is all weird. It's all in black and white. There may be mermaid fucking. There's lots of bodily fluids.
But does it have shaky cam?
No.
No shaky cam?
No shaky cam.
All right.
But it's insane, and amazingly watchable. It's like so crazy. Like the entire thing is so insane.
I love fucked up.
It reminded me of Guy Madden and I don't know why.
You said the magic word other than keystone. Keystone? Key? I don't know.
It's
Guy Madden. It can almost do no wrong for me.
It's really bizarre. It's a really, really crazy movie that actually kind of works. I don't know. I mean, I can understand why it's made money because it's just the weirdest thing.
Nice.
And then finally, I saw Judy with Renee Zellweger playing an older version of
Judy Garland.
It's okay. Renee Zellweger is really good in the role, but the movie is just kind of like meh. Star Wars, the new Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker. It's okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I was really bored. I found it really flat.
For whatever its runtime was, I was remarkably still engaged with it. It didn't actively piss. Man, it's really.
Yeah, no.
I had set such a low bar.
Oh, this is it.
For this, it was a nice little movie. I'm glad I saw that's going to be a little bit forgettable, that wrapped the series up in an okay kind of way.
Let me ask you this. How much time were Jawas in this film?
almost. I don't remember any Jawas.
I was going to say, I don't remember Jawas unless I don't know
then
what a Jawa
I don't
looks
need
like.
To see it in the theater.
I there don't know. I just thought it was a bit long in the teeth. I mean, it wraps things up fine, but I mean, I haven't really cared for this series anyway, so.
There was some of the fight scenes that could have been shorter, like.
There were just a lot of, like, explosions.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that.
But it had enough time between the action scenes to actually contemplate stuff, which I appreciated. Sure. Didn't need a whole lot of time.
There were people crying in the audience.
Oh, of course there were. I mean, I've written off the fandom, to be perfectly honest. But the interesting thing for me about this film was having seen the first one theatrical release in 1977, which was 42 years ago.
Yeah.
I went on this kind of like, where was I when the movies came out kind of thing.
43 years ago now.
Sure. Okay. Can't do math. I can't remember what. Anyway, doesn't matter. No. I think it's 42 and change, actually. Yes. But yeah.
Technically.
But yeah, no, it was like, okay, so I was like, I think 15 in high school when the first one came out, and then the next set came out, and I was like mid-career and visiting a friend in California, and, you know, the last ones come out in this age, and it was like, it was completely tangential to the whole storyline, but it was kind of fun using them as time marks in my life.
It's weird. It's the original trilogy. Like, enwrapped my childhood. Like, I did see it in the theater. I barely remember it. I was 4. That's all my brother wanted for his birthday and Christmas was to see Star Wars. He just nagged my mom incessantly, so she took us to see Star Wars. So I saw it original run, although I barely remember. I remember more dressing up as Jawa for Halloween that year and then dressing up as Jawa repeatedly for many years. And then, like, the next one came out, I remember Empire, clearly, and that was amazing. And then Return of the Jedi is the exact moment in my life. I can date it to the very moment when I understand what, like, I was being sold something. It was the very first time when all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, Ewoks are selling me teddy bears, and I didn't like the feeling of that. It's like capitalism. Oh, I get it, you sons of bitches. So, yeah, it's weird. Like, from absolutely being obsessed to hating it within, like, about 7 years of my childhood.
I will always be... Well, I mean, the first three movies, theatrically, I still have a really soft spot for. And it was... Some of it maybe wasn't the best, but they were all like really fun, really good movies for me.
I like it when the Empire wins.
It ended for me the glut, or not the glut, the desert of science fiction. That's not the word I'm like. What a drought. The science fiction drought. There was no science fiction in the movies. Like, I think 2001 was the previous science fiction movie, and I'm watching all of these for me at the time, like really fun 50s late show science fiction movies, and it's like, where's the new movies? And Star Wars jump-started that, and I'm always thankful for that.
Yeah,
end of an era for the time being.
And then it's interesting, right? The Mandalorian is far, far better than the last six of that main set. Agreed. Star Wars movies.
And Agreed. They have Grey Jawa, so
apparently
winning in Colleen's book.
That's right. All you have to do is throw Jawa in there and I'll watch it.
And finally, a movie that I didn't think I would watch and I certainly wouldn't think would impress me, Dr. Sleep.
Oh,
so I
what the hell's that about again?
So this is the
Shining.
Yeah, the Shining sequel. We never knew we wanted or needed.
Okay,
it's legit good.
It is
legit good.
See, from the trailer, the first like half, I'm like going, I went into it going, I don't need this. There's no need for this to go. Hey, this might be okay. And then all of a sudden, like psychic vampires are there, and I'm like going, what?
Psychic vampires are a thing. It's really good. Like, really? I'm as shocked as the next person. So I watched it because Phil and Adrian talked about it on one of the last, like, the recent episodes of The Green Screen of Death. Shout out. And they had nothing but good things to say. And I'm like, is it possible that this movie is actually good? Because, I mean, Bill's tastes are very, like, particular. Mm-hmm. And when he doesn't like something, he really doesn't like something. So the fact he was praising a movie that I thought looked like shit, I'm like, okay, well, maybe there's something to this. So I dug it up. I found a copy. I watched it. And I was like, holy shit, this thing is actually really good. It's great as a standalone movie. And if you watch it as a companion piece to The Shining, it actually, like, I don't think it, like, changes The Shining.
No.
But I like that it builds on the mythology.
Okay.
It actually gives you answers that The Shining never gives.
Good.
It's really solid.
See, I just like the whole psychological sort of, like, cabin fever aspect of the first.
Okay, so it's not that. Yeah. Like, it's a very, very, very different movie. Yeah. Like, it's very much, like,
supernatural.
Yeah, it's the supernatural. It's much more in playing in the Stephen King, like,
because the original they just hinted forces. At in the movie.
Exactly. So that's the thing. Like, The Shining is a psychological horror film about like basically cabin fever that has maybe something supernatural at play, but nothing is ever answered.
I like psychological thriller more than I like paranormal thriller.
And this is way deep in the paranormal. Like, way deep, like knee deep, but it's really
worth
good.
Looking at. All right,
it's worth looking at. Ferguson, what's her name? Hold on, Rebecca Ferguson is amazing. Ewan McGregor is really good, and, like, all around, it's just like a super solid thriller. I really liked it. I was completely impressed.
Nice.
I will watch it again for sure.
Excellent.
And that's it. I'll stop talking for now.
Podcasts.
Oh.
I have one.
Does Dale have any other movies?
I have some movies.
Oh, sorry. I'm sort of
sorry to burst your bubble, Colleen. I've been talking forever. I'm sorry.
The Kitchen. I saw. You talked about that a while ago. With
yes, I still haven't seen that.
Oh, I thought you'd seen that.
Nope.
Really? Oh, I'm totally misremembered. So that's the mob hit where
the mob
Hell's Kitchen and I didn't write their names down, but Moss and
Melissa McCarthy.
Thank
and
you.
I can't remember who the last.
Yeah, take over the kind of the mob stuff in the area. It was. It didn't work on all the levels. Like, I didn't. There was some really great performances in there, and the concept was fun, but some aspects of it didn't work, but it was fun watching the actresses, some great performances.
It looked like it could be fun.
I think my favorite movie that I saw in the last month, and I don't know how I missed it, The Dressmaker from 2015 with Kate Winslet.
Yes.
As the dressmaker who returns to her hometown to... Yep. Figure out a dark moment in her childhood.
Yeah.
It also starred Liam Hemsworth as a love interest with a character arc that totally was kind of wonderfully surprising.
I really like this movie. It's a good one.
And Judy Davis, who I haven't seen forever.
Yeah.
God, her as the mother, she did, like, an amazing performance. This movie, it's kind of almost like a spaghetti Western where... Almost she's coming back for revenge, but not really, because she's trying to work stuff out. But it has this kind of touch of surrealism in a really wonderful way. And
it's super charming.
She's making these haute couture dresses in this, like, Western town in the 30s that these women are wearing all the time because they're beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like, it played with so many things, and it had this wonderful light touch. It was exquisite.
Yeah.
Operation Petticoat from 1959. Cary Grant plays a World War II sub commander.
Yeah,
the sub is kind of heavily damaged and has some misadventures getting back to safe port. Like, takes on six women nurses, and the dynamic of that in a sub is always fun. And it got painted pink.
Yeah, they ran out of a white lead, and they only had red lead, so they mixed it together and had pink lead.
Nice.
Yeah. One of the things I always love about the good movies from the 50s, because they couldn't come out with sexual references directly, is all the, it is an innuendo, but all of these obscure references, and you're like, oh, I know what that means. It's
North by Northwest going into the tunnel. What's that alluding to?
Yes, and I think it must have been pretty risque in that there was exposed lingerie.
Like, it's true. They were hanging it to dry.
Well, and the girdle working, replacing the spring.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. It is what it is. Space Milkshake from 2012, which is a little Canadian sci-fi comedy with Amanda Tapping, Kristen Crook, and George Takei.
Oh,
Space
yes.
The humor wasn't quite there for me, but it was good enough that I had some fun watching it.
I think it's directed by Amanda Tapping, too. I vaguely remember it being a Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that.
It's not going to win any awards, but it's kind of fun to watch through. We talked about Star Wars. I saw Knives Out.
Oh yeah.
It's a fun romp, but I found it a bit draggy.
Yeah, me too.
It didn't.
I'm in the same boat. And I thought it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't quite what I was expecting for kind of like the tour de force of that kind of detective thing.
Oh, okay.
Might have been it, but. Yeah, so, I mean, thumbs up, but not super, super enthusiastically. And for whatever reason, I mean, it was Christmas. I got into a ton of Christmas movies. I, like, watched 6 or 7 of them, most of them Hallmark. when you make that many movies, there's some charming ones that fall out. The one I'm going to call out is, it was called It's Christmas Carol, had Carrie Fisher in it, which kind of surprised me. She must have needed a paycheck. Mm. I kind of enjoyed the ones I watched, but watching that many, they were, you know, charming in their predictable kind of rom-com way. But I started, you know, like you were saying,
formulaic.
Like you were saying with the Ewoks, like, oh my God, there's this kind of 50s propaganda promoting marriage and living in a small town. Yeah. Like, it's just like, oh, that's kind of
give
insidious.
Give up your big city career and basically get married to there your local beau.
This was the evolution of the movies. It wasn't like the women no longer have to give up their career, but life is better in a small town being married.
They open up their own soap shop and they run it out of the town and be a big wig business lady running a soap shop or a candle shop.
A number of variations of that. Actually, there was one movie where it's like, God, this guy is like probably cute and like charming, but he's a loser. Yeah. Like this woman totally pulls his ass out of the fire and she's in love with him. Like that, I don't know. Anyway, it was interesting. Interesting thing to do. I don't think I will do it again. And fortunately, my friend came over when he found out I hadn't seen National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh.
He came over with it. We watched it.
I still don't know how that's even humanly possible.
It was a palate cleanser.
Randy Quaid.
And
how is it even like physically possible? Not, it's on TV around Christmas.
I know,
all the time.
But,
yeah, but if you're not actively watching television,
I guess I don't know. We see it like 5 or 6 times over the course of the holidays without even trying.
Yeah, I've been actively avoiding the National Lampoon.
Oh, okay, that could be something because when I see that one come up, I'm like, okay, we're watching it.
But I want to say, I can't remember the actress's name now from there. There's the voiceover. My friend and I listened to part of the voiceover commentary stuff, and I have never particularly enjoyed her performances as an actress. I'm going to have to get her name now. But Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh, yeah.
But man, on the commentary, it's like, wow, this woman has been getting bad scripts. Like, she was the one making all the interesting kind of smart comments on the thing. But anyway, yes. Been there, done that now, can honestly say, yeah. And that's my movies.
I have no podcasts, at least nothing new.
All right, I only have the one. I just, at work, I haven't been able to listen to much, so I haven't been searching for anything really weird, but I did find one. It's called The Story Must Be Told, and it this, like, it's a new story every week. It's a fictional sort of like podcast, a fictional story podcast, but they've put it in the format that you're almost like at a church/cult meeting. And like, so like the story must be told. And then everyone like chanting back, the story must be told. And they're like, people are confessing just the weirdest things and the story must be told. And then they get into the story. And I've only listened to about like 4 episodes and all 4 of the stories are just so effing weird. Like, what are they talking? Like,
it is the way.
Super weird. And then like at the end is like, the story had to be told. The story must be told. And then it ends. It's really weird. It has promise. I'm not really big on the single story sort of like format. I like sort of like more of the soap operas for my story. But it's pretty good. I liked it. So, the story must be told.
The story must be told.
I do like the title of it.
I don't have any new podcasts either, but I wanted to give a shout out to the, oh, I forget what the network is called, but Podcastle and Escape Pod. So if you like sci-fi and fantasy stories read out to you, they take fiction that's sometimes been published, sometimes they do some original stuff, and they get a narrator to read it out. It's a great way to get your weekly fix for storytelling. There's also Pseudopod for if you're into horror, and it is, there's definitely, as the editors have gone, the stories have been like more enjoyable at times and less depending on who's picking. But overall, it's a really nice way to get my science fiction hit. And I highly recommend you check them out. They do some Christmas stories, which is like, there was a Christmas dragon.
Nice.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And I have no books.
You have no books? Okay, I have 2 books. First one is called The Third Secret. It's by Steve Barry. He's been my replacement for Preston and Cheryl.
The current replacement.
And this one is about the Vatican kind of thing. Ooh. And how the prophecies of Fatima kind of thing. The 3 children who witnessed the Madonna kind of thing. And left them 3 secrets, and it wasn't until about 2000 that the third secret was actually revealed by, well, in this one, the third secret, it went on farther. Like, it didn't end that quickly, so the church only said the first, like, 2 sentences or something, and there was a lot more that was basically, stop being mean to people, like, the poor, like, guard your flock kind of thing, and like so that women are important to the church and should be included, and women should have complete autonomy over their bodies, and like things like that. I'm like, it's a bit of a weird stretch, but okay, it was a decent quick read. And then there's a new Preston and Child out. I'm only halfway through, but it's called Verses for the Dead. And this time, there's a new guy in charge of the FBI, and he's had enough of Pendergast's antics. So he's paired him up with a partner, which he's always been a lone wolf. And this time it's a Native American partner that's also a little bit on the weird side, called Cold Moon is his name.
Nice.
Yeah. And so someone's killing women, cutting out their hearts, and then leaving them on the graves of previous people who had died.
Lovely. Kind
of thing. Yes. So I don't know how to end. You'll have to wait till next podcast for me to wax poetic about it. But so far, it is exactly what you want from a Preston and Child a Pendergast book. Yeah. That's it.
Nice.
One book, Tripwire, which is in the next one in the Jack Reacher series Lee Childs. And yeah, it was exactly what I expected out of a Jack Reacher novel. He did his Jack Reacher thing. Yeah. Interestingly, the plot involves Vietnam and a helicopter, just like that movie that's coming out, whose name I've already forgotten.
Something of Valor?
Yeah. It's kind of, and like, it's kind of interesting sometimes how
those things kind of come
together. Yeah. But I'm kind of excited. I finally, after being on hold for months, Robin Doolittle's new book on the Me Too movement in Canada. She's a reporter for Toronto Star. I think she worked on the Robbs Ford story. I can't remember.
Okay. That's coming out as a podcast form or something right now.
There's at least one podcast I know about
Ford.
Called Wag the Doug on like Ford. But yeah, no, this book was, she talks about the research, like that big piece that she did, talking about how a lot of sexual assaults weren't even investigated because the police felt they were unfounded. And her reporting actually caused the system to get evaluated and changed. So nice. I'm looking forward to that.
So is it coming out now or has it
been Oh, no, the book is out. The book's been released. Yeah, okay. I was just on the waiting list. So yeah.
Okay, just so that...
It just actually came off hold... Or not, sorry. I just got the note like yesterday that, book is now available to be picked up.
Awesome.
Excellent.
That's it.
That was
a lot of stuff.
More to talk about here than when we talked about January movies.
Yeah, it's true. So come on by etcpod.ca. We will link to all the stuff we talked about today. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the February preview.
I know. February. Well, and it's 2020. I still like 2000. Thinking about 2000, in some ways, doesn't seem like that long ago. In other ways, it seems like a long time ago. Yeah. But
I remember being absolutely sort of like blown away that like when 2000 happened, I'd be 27 years old. It just sort of like boggled my mind. It's like I'm gonna be so old when the millennium hits.
20 years. Well, and now I remember when that first Star Wars came out, and it was just like, yeah, he's actually thought of like 9 episodes. And it's like,
we're here.
Will we ever get to see the last one in the series? Will they even do that? And it's like, ding, 42, 43 years later.
Yeah, here we are.
Nice.
So, yeah, until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.